When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Today on The Grave Talks, a life of hauntings. A conversation with Beth Darlington. It was a dark and stormy night. The stereotypical intro to almost any childhood ghost story. Except on the dark night we're about to talk about, there was a real ghost story. A ghost story that happened in front of young girls, innocently playing outside, looking off in the distance under the streetlight, only to see a person standing there. But something was off. Something didn't seem right about the period of dress this person happened to be wearing. Could this figure possibly be something other than a living human? Could they be seeing a ghost? That's where it all starts for Beth Darlington.
Oh, it sounds very cliche because a lot of people will say, oh, it's always been there. But again, I have to join that crowd. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. I've always had the interest in it. It's always fascinated me. Obviously growing up, many years ago, not too many years ago, I was able to, the interest was there. It wasn't something that was talked about mainstream. It's a lot more different now, I find. I think it's a lot more open. People are a lot more easily talking about it. It's a lot more, people are more accepting. I think also having moved from Australia to the UK, here in the UK, it is definitely a lot more accepting here than it is in Australia. Australia still has a lot of stigma. So to actually develop an interest in an environment where it's kind of, it's sort of like a cheeky sort of laugh, sort of a knock of the ribs kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's really been quite a nice thing to actually have. That's when you know it's a genuine interest. So I've always had it, always been fascinated by why people can see certain things, fascinated about why objects moved. I mean, poltergeists back in the day used to frighten the bejeebies out of me. Now I'm absolutely fascinated and researching and reading as much as I can. It's probably one of my favorite, types of possible paranormal phenomena. And so I was always intrigued. It was just something really mysterious about it. Now, my sister and I, growing up in Sydney in Australia, we grew up with parents that were very skeptical. My mum was a journalist and very, you know, if you, when you're dead, you're dead. And she used to sort of joke around and go, you know, if I ever saw a ghost, I'd like, you know, that'll be it. I'm happy with that. And my sister and I would be like, oh, we would be as well, but we'd probably be running in the other direction. But for her, she was like, it's never going to happen. I don't care. My auntie, her sister, here in the UK, had her own spooky experience. And this is one of the stories that my sister and I kind of, I think we kind of almost latched onto a little bit. And it was where she was walking through the car park of a beautiful old building she was working in, because surprise, surprise, there's tons of those on this side of the world. And as she walked to her car, she could see somebody in period costume. Now, her location, the place where she was working at, is a beautiful old building, which is probably about 400, 500 years worth of history. And so she's thought, well, hang on a second, why is there somebody standing there in this sort of Tudor type outfit with the hat and the feather and the, hang on, what's this about? She thought, you know, it's nighttime. I'm going to work, like I'm going back from work, going home. Mm-hmm. And this particular image was actually under a streetlight, so it wasn't a sort of a shadow. It was in full detail.
Yeah.
She thought that's a bit strange. So she kept walking, took a couple of more steps, turned around, looked again, and the figure actually turned and disappeared under the actual light, under the street lamp. That's when her knees went quite jelly-like.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, there was another gentleman that was also leaving work at the same time. It was obviously in winter time here, which obviously it's quite dark very early. And he saw her become quite overwhelmed, and he came over to her and said, "Are you okay?" And she said, I don't know. So, and of course, with my mum hearing this, big skeptic said, "Oh, it never works. It never happens that way. It'll never happen to me," which it didn't. But so my sister and I grew up very much with this sort of skeptical, almost negative connotation when it came to the possibility of an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And so later on, when I think I got to my late teens, I really started to become very interested in it. And I, you know, my very first book was Royal Ghostly Haunted Homes, and I loved it. And I always would go to my favorite chapter, which was about Hampton Court Palace, and I thought, oh, I'd love to go there one day and walk through the haunted gallery and hear Catherine screaming, and, you know, like just to have that experience. Obviously, part of me would be extremely frightened at the time. Obviously, when one looks at investigating possible paranormal phenomena, they kind of grow their courage over the years. But back then, I would have loved to have seen it, but not loved to have seen it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was one of the things I absolutely wanted to do as an adult growing up and coming over here. And luckily, I've been to Hampton Court about three times. So, and I've walked that particular area, and like it's, you know, as you can imagine, and many people who have been on your show can imagine, when you get to go to a location that you've known of for so long, it's like meeting a celebrity. It really is, except it's a location as opposed to a person.
Yeah.
And you think, oh my gosh, I'm here, this feels amazing.
So
it's always been there. It's always been there, and it just grew. And at one point I moved over to the UK about 14 years ago, and I thought, oh, I want to do something ghosty. I really love this stuff. It's so different. And I know there's probably lots of lovely haunted buildings to go and stick about in, because I was watching those ghost shows. Yes, I'm one of those people.
Sure.
And as I did, I started to think, maybe I can do this myself. Maybe there's a way to be able to find my own answers. And that's how it originally started for me to really get into it and really have those experiences and learn from them as well. And once a month, I'd make a journey out to somewhere in London and get to experience, you know, some really interesting phenomena. And of course, I moved back to Australia thinking, great, it's going to be exactly the same here. And it's going to be busting full of events and locations. And it was like tumbleweed rolling across the floor. There was nothing like it was here in the UK. And I was bitterly disappointed. So I then thought, you know, I want to start up a website for people who want to do this from a paranormal investigative perspective. And that's why I started my website, Access Paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's like a bit of a sly on the Access Hollywood. So it was like, yeah, you know, thank you.
Yeah.
It's not about celebrities, but it's about ghost celebrities. But yeah.
You also have a video of Donald Trump talking about doing inappropriate things with a ghost, you know, just like.
Wow. It'd be a big website to be able to have anything to have all that about. You one out of service space.
It's like, and it still doesn't seem to phase anything. But so this is interesting, because I'm really surprised to hear that about Australia not, you know, being not that much into ghosts. Because quite honestly, I mean, we have listeners from around the world, and we have a good chunk in Australia. So is it one of those things where there's a lot of people that have the interest there? It's just not as, I guess, talked about in the open as maybe in the States or in the UK?
Absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head right there. A lot of people in Australia are interested. We really love it. We have a beautiful history, got an Indigenous Australian history on top of that as well. Mm-hmm. But the openness with speaking about it or talking about it is a lot more different, I've found, since being here in the UK. It's a very different ball game. Here, it's people are a lot more open. Just you know, your Joe Blogs down the street is quite happy to chat about, you know, someone's cousin's brother's mother had an experience. But trying to speak to somebody in Australia is a little bit more difficult. It's changing. It's changing. That's for sure. Definitely has made its difference this time. But yeah, definitely just changing.
Taking time to get there, a little slower than the rest, it seems, on that one, which I'm honestly kind of surprised by. Let's talk about, you said earlier in your life, you know, the idea of poltergeist activity or experiencing poltergeist activity. You said, you know, you're terrified by this, and now, you know, you love it. Tell me about some of those earlier experiences that you had where it was poltergeist activity that frightened you.
I think it comes down to the fact there's no control when objects move in your vicinity. So if something suddenly flies across the room sporadically, it's something where it's because I can't control it. It's just spontaneously happened. I think originally that's where that fear had come from.
Yeah.
And again, like as you can imagine, you know, you want it to happen. When it happens, it's actually quite confronting.
Sure.
No, I've been in a situation where we were investigating a particular location. I have to say, undisclosed, because unfortunately this property wants to be kept private.
Sure, that's fine.
And there was a voice recorder sitting on the actual table at the time, and often when I've placed my voice recorders, I always put it on top of a sponge, even just your bog standard kitchen sponge, because it's you know, it's not going to, the microphone's not going to absorb any vibration, particularly from any hard surface.
Good idea.
So
I like that.
Yeah, there you go, tip for everybody. And it just sat there, and at one point someone said, oh, I think it's probably best, you know, we head out now. I mean, we all stood up, we looked around, thought, oh, yeah, we probably need to, you know, grab the microphone, went to walk over, and it shot across the room.
Oh my God.
It literally just, but it had velocity to it as well. It had force behind it.
Yeah.
And I'd seen it with my own eyes. Now, of course, we've been sitting in the dark for a bit of time by that point, but your eyes adjust over time as well. So, and we could see clearly that no one was around it. We went to go towards it, and it literally flew across the room, and it was. And I thought, okay, well, you know, ask and you shall receive. Not all the time, but thank you. And okay, so, and you confront your fear so much so, because, you know, you want to see this, you want to experience it. Mm-hmm. But when it happens at first, you're like, it's confronting.
Oh, sure. I mean, when that first happened to you, what was that, on an investigation, or was that just you living life and suddenly it happened?
It was actually on an investigation, yeah.
Really?
I know a lot of people will say to me and ask, oh, you know, would you ever investigate your own home or your friend's home? I will never do that, because, you know, once you start, you can't stop. But I think for me, there's safety in being at home and being on a job. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't take your job always home with you, because then you never get to rest. And, if you know, so I tend to not do that in my own place and everyday life. But this was specifically out at a location where something like that did actually happen.
Sure. Before you got involved with investigating, and I know you told me that story of your childhood with you and your sister, were there any other experiences that stand out to you that continue to kind of drive that passion and interest?
Yeah. Yeah, plenty. And it's not the standard way where it's, you know, the Amityville Horror House, you know, sort of shaking of windows or anything like that. It's actually really quite, you know, little bits of mundane stuff here and there. Yeah. But when it happens, every time it's happened to me, it changes me. And I've always said that to other people, like, you know, when you experience something that can be quite intense, you can never be the same person again, because it makes you question how our world works, whether it's afterlife, whether it's something else we haven't explained yet. So, but oh my gosh, yes, there was one time I was in investigating a former mental asylum in a certain part of New South Wales back in Australia. Mm-hmm. And we were in a room at the time, and I remember looking up at one of our team members, and it looked, I remember it to this day. He was standing in front of me, and it's like a black shadow part of himself pulled away from his own body. Now, we're all stationary. There was no light. We're away. We're in the middle of, there's lots of bushland. There's lots of, you know, trust me, there was nothing. There was no cars going past. There's absolutely no reason for any moving light. Yeah. But this he's like his body split into two, but it was, one was a shadow coming away from him. And I never forget it to this day. And I thought, is this one of these where people start to become doppelgangers? Mm-hmm. Where there's this person that starts to kind of come away from another person in form. And literally I felt like this is some kind of like Terminator sort of slash, you know, event. You know, it's like poke my shoulder. Yeah. Like, am I actually looking at this? And that was probably one of the first ones that confronted me since being in Australia. I mean, I've been chased around a pool table by another table. That was really interesting. They call it obviously table tipping. I've always been intrigued by that, and there could be other explanations, but tables do move while people do have their hands on the top in certain ways. I'm still working all that out myself, but I have had that as well. My word, so many different beautiful experiences, and they do change you. They really do, and in a good way, in a really good way, actually.
Tell me open-minded. More. I've heard the term table tipping. It's been a long time. Tell me more about how that works and what happened with you.
Well, we were in a location in Queensland, which is a state north of New South Wales in Australia. Beautiful place in near Townsville. And we had a couple of people, and it was one of these tables that were kind of like a light plasticky type table. And there was five people that had their fingers just lightly on the top. Now, if you can push a table with fingers lightly on the top, you know, good luck. And we practiced before and afterwards as well, because I'm like, come on, guys, this was pretty good. You know, where's the camera? You know, literally, it's like, come on.
Sure.
So everyone had their fingers lightly on the top of the table. And so, of course, we're asking a couple of questions, and then it started to move and shift. But then it just had a life of its own. And the people that had their fingers on the table were running after it. Like, literally, the table was moving quicker than people were actually moving along with it. It had a life of its own. It was like, let's, you know, it's like literally like a racehorse around. And there's this beautiful, beautiful old pool table, because it was an actual old hotel. And it was going around it. And at one point I thought, I want to see what this looks like, but reverse. So I actually ran in front of the actual table that was moving to see, you know, if that would change anything. You know, is it chasing after me? Is it chasing after something else? Is it going to change the situation? I was looking. I had torches underneath at the same time. Sorry, flashlights. My bad. It's my I remember your lovely USA buddies call it flashlights. We call it torches. I know. Sure. It sounds really old-fashioned.
No, I know. Yeah. Yeah. I like torches better. It sounds cooler.
Very medieval, isn't it? We haven't really changed much.
I love it. Like, I wish we did torches. It'd be cooler.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. Yes. But yeah, it was me. I was checking. I was checking to see what was going on. You know, how people were moving. It is on video camera, thankfully, because often, as you can imagine, sometimes when these things happen, that video camera, A, does not work, B, was never there. Yeah. It's just one, that's what it is. It's paranormal stuff. It's spontaneous phenomena. So it's like, so good. So it was really intriguing. That was one of the best experiences I had with table tipping. I've had one time where I was with another investigation, and we asked for it to tilt to the side, and it slowly tilted, and everyone's fingers lightly in the middle, just lightly in the middle. And I thought, I wonder how much force is doing this. I wonder if I could, you know, push it down, right? Push the other table, part of the table that's tilted up. Because if that's the case, then it must be people at the table doing it. Mm-hmm. I went to put my hand down, and it was like concrete. I couldn't move it. I'm like, this is weird.
Yeah.
And I'm pushing, and everyone's looking at me and going, I'm pushing down. I'm like, I can't push this down. What? And it's on an angle, literally is on an angle. And I'm pushing it down. No, nothing, nothing. It was like as if whatever was happening was so strong. And I thought, it can't be from the people. It has to be something else. And again, that night I walked away going, wow, I cannot look at life the same way again.
Sure. I mean, it's one of those things where, when you get into it, I think a lot of us begin thinking, oh, you know, we'll have we'll answer some of these questions we have. But you end up with far more questions than answers the more you dig into this.
All the time. Just sometimes when you think, oh, you know, I've been doing this for a while and I don't know, maybe it's getting a bit stale, and you'll go to an investigation, you're helping out another team, and then something will happen. You think, why did that happen? I wonder if, hang on, so if that can happen there, why was it that day? Why was it that time? Was it the people? And you, like you say, it literally becomes another journey, another looking at how things, you know, how the world works around us and what possibly could happen in an afterlife.
Exactly. What you said earlier when you kind of, you know, you started out on this, you were, you know, wanting to find answers. What answers specifically were you looking for, you know, at the beginning?
Oh, in the beginning, I wanted proof of the afterlife. That originally, that's what it was. I wanted proof that there was, that, you know, we don't just die. Because my father, you know, I spoke about my mum, but my dad was very much, and still is very much about, you know, when you die, that's it. You know, it's kind of it. And, you know, thanks for coming. Here's your golden watch.
Yeah.
Your retirement. Off you go. I thought it's got to be something more than that, because I've picked up on things over time. Every now and then, as an individual, I'm definitely not a medium. I'm about as mediumistic as the chair that I sit on right now. Like, literally, that has more power than I do.
Yeah.
But I believe in gut instincts, and I believe in being open to that. And I think, you know, people say the best paranormal equipment is yourself. Mm-hmm. I said, yes, but you also need to know that you've got a design fault as well.
Yeah.
So there's little things that... Yeah, we ain't perfect, yeah, but sure. It's still at the same time, you know, it's being open at least. And my father was very much a, you know, that's it, you die, that's it, you go, and that's how it is. So mm-hmm. I, you know, for my sister and I to have the beliefs that we have and being open-minded as we have been over the years, you know, growing up in that environment, I think is very rare, as I said, particularly in Australia as well. But I'm fascinated by it. Originally, again, it was about... you know, the possibility of an afterlife and proof of that. But now that is not completely changed. I'm just more open to other different reasons as to what could be happening.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. What was the moment where you really, you got your answer of, okay, yeah, this is obviously happening. And then you kind of, you know, shifted, you know, almost your direction or your feel because you accepted that.
Yeah. Oh, my word. I think it must have been when I was living here the first time round. Oh, I know. I get around, round, round, round. I get around. Relax. So, yeah, paranormally, of course. But, yeah, I actually I was here about 14 years ago and getting involved and really getting very, very into it. And there was a time where we were sitting there and, you know, we all had what is it with table tipping lately? But anyway, we all had our fingers on the top of the table and we were asking questions and you're getting tapping and we had a flashlight again on everyone's fingers. And of course, everyone had a flashlight with everyone's feet. So everyone's feet were stationary, everyone's wearing shoes, everyone's hands can be seen, and it was tapping, but it sounded like a fingernail tapping on wood. So that's the first thing I thought. I was like, oh, who's pulling the wool over my eyes? Like, this is, you know, crap.
Yeah.
So I'm looking around, you know, we had the talk, but the thing is that the phenomena still happened even though we were in the dark and we had flashlights on certain parts. So I thought, all right. And it started to, and I thought, where is this sound coming from? It's within, you know, response to what we're seeing and experiencing and questions. And of course, you know, two for yes, one for no stuff, you know. So you have to be very, very creative with your questioning. People don't realize how full on that can feel, because you'll want to sit there and go, but what's your name? I was like, you can't say yes or no to what's your name. You know, you have to actually try and go, so how am I going to do this? And often you're going through the alphabet or going through numbers, and then for the sound to be made at certain times. People have tried that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when it started to make me curious, in the sense, why is this happening? It just sounded so unique, so, and also so human as well. Mm-hmm. There was also another time when I was back in Australia and we were in a location which was an old tuberculosis hospital, and I had what they call sonic ears. So basically just literally amplifies any sound.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the only people on the location. Again, it's remote, it's Australia, it's awesome, but sometimes these locations haven't been looked after a while, so not so awesome. So
yeah.
From a comfort perspective, you have to go there. So it wasn't in the best of conditions, safe, but not in one of the best conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I had what we known as sonic ears, and I'm listening out and someone's asking a couple of questions, and I was further down the hallway because if they were right next to me, it would be like blowing my ears apart. So I was listening in, and then I could hear somebody walking with a trolley and shoes, And I always think shoes and hearing footsteps is such a human thing to me. Like voices, yes, but I don't know what it is about footsteps. Footsteps really intrigue me because it's, again, such a human sound. It's not like, oh, I might have heard a shuffle. I might have heard this. It's like, oh, you know, this is, I'm hearing something that I can't, you know. We've got audible pareidolia, which, you know, means that you can possibly hear a sound and find your reasoning within it. So, say, for instance, I could be hearing footsteps and it's actually something knocking on the window, but because I'm listening out for footsteps, my brain is already starting to process that sound as being footsteps when it's not. Mm-hmm. And that's, from a visual perspective, that's a whole other ball game. But it was so, it was, and a squeaky tray as well. It was just incredible. And I remember listening to it thinking, we are the only people in here. There's nothing in here. There's no trolleys. There's no people. Because when you investigate locations, you all wear soft sole shoes because we don't want to contaminate any sounds. Mm-hmm. So if you happen to be walking around, particularly on a lot of hard flooring, you don't want to actually make sound. You want to make it as quiet as possible because you're observing the environment. And you can hear someone, it literally just sounded like somebody walking with a trolley and a squeaking trolley in the wheels. And I'm like, you are kidding me, man. Yeah. This is awesome. Of course, didn't have a recorder with me at the time, but I got up and went straight towards where I thought the sound was. And of course, as normal, nobody was there. Mm-hmm.
And you just knew, obviously, then it's like there's no other, it's not a squirrel, it's not a, you know, this or that. It's you heard someone.
And yeah, yeah.
And there's, it's those mistake, unmistakable sounds. It is a very, you know, it's so real because you can't, like, you can't fake it. I mean, not that you could fake a, like an apparition, but it's just one of those things. I had one a couple of weeks ago. I was visiting the first radio station I ever worked in when I was a kid, and it's in my hometown. I was just visiting, but the basement was always so cool. It was part of the Underground Railroad. There's like a bit of a tunnel down there. So, of course, when I'm visiting, and I've been there in several years, the first thing I do is like, I'm going to go to the other side of the building and go to the basement. And they're just like, all right, do whatever you want. Because it's like a family there. And like, cool. So I just went down there. And as I was walking down those steps, it's like a, it's a kind of a hollow basement door that holds, you know, separates the upstairs and downstairs. And there's a very specific sound of knocking on a hollow basement door. It's just, you know, the cheap wood knock, knock. And there's nothing else around that would have that sound to it. We're talking literally just rock walls that go down and then, you know, solid wood on the upper part of the building. And as I'm walking down the steps, I hear knock, knock. And it's like right on that door that I just walked through. And it didn't hit anything. I mean, I shut it behind me. And I was just like, cool. You're recognizing I'm here and how much I like this place. But no,
that's awesome.
Audio is always such an interesting thing with that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, only about 4 months ago, I was investigating, again, another beautiful old pub here in the UK. And I was in a cellar area with another guy who's pretty level-headed and very, I guess you could say, out of the team. He's known as the team skeptic. He's kind of like, could be this, could be that. I'm like, that's good. We need level-headed peeps. That's all good. It's sure. Good to have that balance.
Yeah.
And so I'm really glad that I was paired with him because I enjoyed listening to what he had to say. And also at the same time, I take a lot of what his takes on says on board as well. Mm-hmm. But we went down into the actual cellar and it was pitch black. And the only light you could see was from the millimeter that I had, which was detecting possible EMF fluctuations. Any sort of fluctuations of EMF that were happening, you know, possibility of people feeling sort of scared and uneasy can sometimes be attributed to high levels of EMF.
Sure.
So I and often in closed areas, always basements and attics that tend to have it, right, because of the bad insulation. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, I'll take my device around and blah, blah, blah. So I'm sitting there, but it did feel quite ominous and I was trying to, and that's another thing sometimes when you investigate locations, you've got to try to not look at the location in a spooky way. And it's very difficult because you're fighting with what your body's saying. Protect yourself. Get out. What are you doing?
Sure, sure.
Totally. So it's like I'm sitting there just, okay, you know, it's spooky. There's actual real life cobwebs everywhere. Not the stuff we put on Halloween decorations. No.
Yes.
It's broken glass. There's rocks, all bits and everywhere. So I'm holding this device in my hand and he's probably about a meter away from me. Yes, I'm metric. So he's probably about a meter away from me and I'm standing there and I say, oh, well, you know, we're about to go. So if there's anything here, you know, make your presence known if you so wish. Just like that if someone pushed, well, a force pushed my hand down, which had the device in it. So it pushed the device in my hand down. And it freaked me out because suddenly it just happened. I wasn't expecting anything, because when you say make your presence known, you're kind of thinking it's going to be something audible, or you might see something, or there'll be a tap, but not that. And it freaked me out. And then I had to remember, oh, pull yourself together. You know, it's not the first time something like this may have happened to you before. You've got to gather your nerves, because if you're looking after people in private and residential cases, you can't show fear like that. You can't be rattled, because it doesn't show much confidence to the people that are, you know, once you leave, they've got to live there. So I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And I went upstairs. I'm like, okay, breathe it out. This is awesome. Breathe it out.
Tell me about those sort of moments. I mean, that was one of them, obviously, but what were some of the other moments where you've been in like a private residential case and, you know, you felt like unexpected or just really uncomfortable with what you were dealing with?
It almost feels like even if your body wants to scream, you know, because it's hard to say. It's over the years I've gotten better at it. But in the beginning, when I was with a team, there has been a time where I've been there in someone's lounge room and I'm feeling very apprehensive, very overwhelmed. I didn't feel comfortable, but it doesn't matter how I feel. It matters how they feel, and it matters about investigating the phenomena. So you literally are fighting your fear.
Yeah.
And again, over time, definitely much better than that. And that's why I love with public investigations. I go with groups and we're in a public location. You get to kind of let your hair, I call it a paranormal playground. You get to kind of let your hair down a bit. You try different ideas of different things. Or, look, I bought this little bit, you know, device. I don't know if it's going to work, but it's probably a very expensive piece of plastic, but let's give it a shot. You know, why not? it takes the seriousness out of it. When you're dealing with private and residential cases, there's a whole level of seriousness there, because it's not about you. It's about actually helping somebody else.
Sure.
So that's a whole different ball game. So, yeah, there are times where I believe that there have been investigators, including myself, that will feel fear in certain situations, but you've got to be so good about not showing it. And it's not from a fake perspective, it's a confidence perspective. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you've got to turn it in the sense, no, this is what I'm here to work out and help somebody figure out. There's been private cases where I've dealt where, you know, I've been in one room and someone else has been in another room further down a hallway. We've all been in rooms, but the residents and the tenants of the place said they would hear someone walking up and down the hallway. So we put sensors in the hallway and we're sitting there and we had white noise going along in the background. Again, that sometimes could be another way to be like an audible battery, I guess you could say. It's a Cindy theory. It's an idea. It's, you know, let's give it a go.
Sure.
And we were all hearing footsteps. And again, at the same time, trying to keep in the back of our mind, okay, we're expecting to hear footsteps, but you know when you hear it. And the sensors were going off as well, but nobody was moving up and down the hallway at all. So, and that was another time where I was like, okay, as we say in Australia, suck it up, buttercup, because we're into our rhymes. This is what it's about. It's about learning. And again, an investigation like that, you go home and like your mind is going 100 miles an hour. It's almost like you've had about 10 cups of coffee and you can't sleep. It's just, you're sitting there trying to figure out, but no. And then, you know, the next day we're all sending emails to each other going, oh, but did you see this? No. Put your information together and let's put it into a report. Oh, it's just experiences. But at least, as you can imagine, it validates for the tenants what they're hearing. Even if we think we're hearing footsteps, it's not just saying you're having an experience, but now we can say you are having an experience. We don't know what it is yet, but it's an experience, and we've also had the same. And that can sometimes give somebody just that validation of the fact that, you know, it isn't just about them and it's been about other people as well, having gone through that. Oh, it's fascinating stuff. I absolutely love it.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Beth in part two. What is Beth's goal when she takes on a home investigation? Has there ever been a home investigation where Beth felt that whatever was in the house was simply too much to take on? How does Beth handle the situation in an investigation where it turns out the haunting is truly a mental health issue? And how do mental health professionals handle it when someone legitimately is having a haunting, but the claim sounds more like a mental health problem? Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.